generally in our society is what's new. When there's a new movie or a new car or a new product or even a new person, they capture a lot of attention. The person who is the star of this season's reality show may be gone next season or the one after, but somehow we are powerfully drawn to the new. In politics, people always, whether they're already in office or they're out of office, they promise a change. Things will be new. And there's something in us that responds almost instinctively to that idea that things will be new. But that's not how it works with the way we... Could I ask you to just hold the people in the back for a minute? Isaac? Could I ask you to hold the people in the back for a minute? Thank you. But that's not the way that it works with the Torah reading or with our tradition. After all, this morning what we did was, for the I don't know how many thousandth time, we went back to the beginning of the Torah to read the same thing again. The opposite of finding something new. If this were a synagogue that ran according to the prevailing ethos, the way that people usually work, every Shabbat we'd have a new book for you to read. But in fact, we have the same Siddur, the same prayers, and the same Torah. And we go over and over and over it to the point where you feel like, I already know that story. I don't have to read Adam and Eve again. I know they were in the garden, they ate the fruit, they got kicked out of the garden, God was upset. We know this. But of course, the Torah, like a person, is inexhaustible. And when you know someone well, you don't say, you know what, I don't need to have any more conversations with you, because I already know everything you're going to say, because it is always possible that someone will surprise you. And over a lifetime, you can learn new and different facets of the same person. And that's true with the Torah as well. You can read the same story 100 times, 200 times, 1,000 times, and yet it will each time yield new insights. That's why the rabbis continually return over and over and over again to the Torah, and they give each time a new drasha, a new explanation. There was a naturalist named John Burroughs who said, if you wish to see something new, take the same walk you took yesterday. And it's true. You take the same walk, but first of all, the world changes a little bit, but you change a lot. So this year, you're reading about Adam and Eve differently than you read last year. And next year, God willing, we will read it again, and we will be different again. And it will continually deepen in our minds and in our souls so that we learn more and more and more and more. So that rather than the taste for surprise, we have the taste for deepening recognition. Ah, I know this story. Let's see what it says to me this year, or the year after, or the year after that. That's why you know that sometimes things will come to you in your life that you've known for a long time, but all of a sudden you realize what they mean. Ah, this is what it means. Because now the words are ready to sink into your soul. So we scroll back and read over again that which we have read before, because we have changed. And because there is no perfect reading of the Torah, we'll always miss significant, sometimes startling insights day after day, year after year, that it has to offer us and to open to us. This morning in the sermon, I'm going to give a reading of the story of Adam and Eve, making a comparison that before this year hadn't actually occurred to me. But each year, if you return to it and you try to understand it better, then it really is this idea, that ever-deepening relationship that the Jewish people have with their sacred texts and with one another. Always learning more and more and more. So let me tell you one teaching about Bereshit that I learned once from my father. It was one summer when I was at camp And I had a counselor who actually went on to a career in Jewish education, but not out in Los Angeles, so that's okay. He was by far the worst counselor I ever had. All he wanted to do was make us go to stuff and get us off his hands. And every time we would question what he said or what he did, he would say, "Don't question me because I'm older than you." So my parents came up on visiting day. This was actually, I was in at a camp in Palmer, the Ramah in Palmer, Massachusetts at the time. My parents came up on visiting day and I complained about this counselor. And I said to my father, "And what do I say to him when he says, I'm older than you?" And my father said, as we just read, it says, "Methuselah lived 969 years and begat sons and daughters." My father said, "That's why I always considered Methuselah the saddest person in the Bible. Because can you imagine living almost 1,000 years and not having a single accomplishment worth recording?" He said, so being older in and of itself means nothing. Before he said that, I'd heard of Methuselah. I knew he lived almost 1,000 years. I mean, you learn that when you're a kid in yeshiva, but there's a perfect example of something that seems completely innocuous, completely everyday, but once you hear it, you realize that the text has deepened for you. And so that means that all of us now are slightly older, but we've learned something, which Methuselah never did. Let's bring it.